I want to tell you guys a story about a teacher named Mrs. Thompson and a student named Teddy Stollard. Mrs. Thompson was a fifth grade teacher, and she was getting in her new class of fifth graders, and in that class was this kid named Teddy Stollard. Now, all teachers have their favorites and their least favorites, even if they don't act on it. We do, they do. And Teddy really quickly became Miss Thompson's least favorite. See, he was a smart kid, but he wouldn't try at anything. When she called on him, he wouldn't respond. He had a deadpan face. He showed up to school late. He would sleep in class. And it was just this every single day. But at this school, they forced the teachers have to look at the records of every single kid in the class throughout that first semester. And so she waited all the way till the end to get to Teddy's records. So she reads Teddy's records, and this is what they said. He had been at the school since first grade. First grade, it said, Teddy's a great student, very bright, very cheerful, a pleasure to have in the classroom. Second grade, Teddy's very bright. He's wonderful. The kids like him, but I'm worried about him. His mom has just been diagnosed with a terminal illness. Siri just turned on.
Yes?
No. Okay. Third grade record says, Teddy's slow. He doesn't pay much attention in class. He lost his mother the end of last year. I don't think he gets a lot of help from his father. Fourth grade, Teddy comes to school late. He basically just fills a seat. He doesn't answer any questions when I ask on him. He's failing a lot of his subject. I'm worried that if someone doesn't reach out to him, he's gonna go off the deep end. Now, fifth grade, here she has Teddy. How many of you guys think her perspective for Teddy has changed? She says in this moment, she says, what Teddy needs more than anything is he needs some encouragement in his life. So she started, it was December, she started encouraging Teddy. And she said she started to see him smile more and be on time. And then Christmas was coming and all the kids were bringing Christmas presents for their teacher and she was opening them up and it got to Teddy's section, Teddy's time, and she grabs Teddy's presents and it was clear that Teddy had wrapped it himself. They didn't have a lot of money, it was a newspaper. And as she opened it up, all the kids laughed. Inside was a bracelet, a rhinestone bracelet with many of the rhinestones missing and a half-used bottle of perfume. She quickly diffused the kids' laughter as she sprayed it on herself and put the bracelet on, talking about how beautiful she smelled and looked, and she kept going. Well, that day after class, Teddy stayed late. All the kids left, and Teddy came up to Mrs. Thompson. He said, Mrs. Thompson, I want you to know that you look just as beautiful in that bracelet as my mom looked, and you smell just as pretty as she smelled. Then he left, and she cried for the next hour. She realized in this moment that she's just not a teacher who's supposed to teach math and science, that she was gonna be a teacher who encouraged and taught kids, that she was gonna be an encouragement. And that's what she was for the rest of the year with Teddy. And Teddy totally came out of his shell and he graduated on to sixth grade and she didn't hear much from him in the next couple years. But 4 years later, she gets a message from Teddy. It says, Mrs. Thompson, I want you to know that I'm graduating high school with honors. You're still my favorite teacher. She says, yeah. She gets another one 4 years later. I see tears out there. This is funny. She gets another one 4 years later. And it says, Mrs. Thompson, this has been a really hard year. I lost my father. I've been going through college. But I'm glad to say that I've graduated college. I've never forgot all the things that you've told me, and I want you to know you're still my favorite teacher. She gets another message from him 2 years later. He says, Mrs. Thompson, I want you to know that I found a girl. I love her. We're gonna get married, and I don't have a mother or a father. Would you please come and sit where my mother would have sat? And she went to that wedding. Isn't that an incredible story of what happens when someone decides that they are going to be an encourager to someone else? She took Teddy's life trajectory and she changed it all because she decided that she was gonna put to power the use of encouragement. You know what we're talking about this morning? It's not going to be anything new to anybody. But if you understand it, you will see that it's one of the most powerful things that we possess. It's one of the most influential things that we can grasp. Every great leader uses it, and every successful person is surrounded by it, and every single one of us in here has an unending amount of it. Today, this morning, I want to talk about the power to encourage, the power to encourage others. Sir William Arthur Ward says this. He says, "Flatter me, and I may not believe you. Criticize me, and I may not like you. Ignore me, and I may not forgive you. Encourage me, and I will not forget you." You know, I wonder if we were to think of all of the most influential people in our lives, the people that have done the most to help us, to bring potential out of us, to help us through our situations. I wonder if we think of the most influential people in our lives, they are probably also those that have encouraged us the most in our lives. It's the way it works. God cares so much about encouragement that he tied his name to encouragement. He gave himself the identity of being an encourager. I want to read this to you. It's Corinthians 1, 3 through 4. And it says this. It's 2 Corinthians 1, 3 through 4. It says, "Blessed be the God and the Father of our Lord Jesus Christ, the Father of mercies and God of all comfort." Now, this is important to understand this word comfort. This word comfort, it comes from the word paraklesis, which means to exhort, to admonish, or to encourage. In fact, this word paraklesis is normally translated as encouragement throughout the Bible. So he says, "The Father of mercies and the God of all comfort, who comforts us in all our affliction, so that we will be able to comfort those who are in any affliction with the comfort with which we ourselves are comforted by God." Now, this is the important part. He says that he is the God of comfort. What he doesn't say is that he's the God who can comfort. He doesn't say he's the God who sometimes comforts. He says he's the God of comfort, of encouragement, that he's tied it to himself. He's added it to his name. It's not just something that he does. It is who he is. He is the God of encouragement. Now, let's take that same idea and run with Romans 15, 5. It says this, "Now may the God who gives perseverance and" what? "Encouragement grant you to be of the same mind with one another according to Christ." So this is what he's saying. He's saying the God that gives encouragement wants every single one of his people to be of the same mind. What he's asking of Neil, what he's asking of you, he's saying, I want you to be, not to just be Neil who can give encouragement. That's not what he's asking there. He says, I don't want you to be Neil who needs encouragement. That may be true, but that's also not what he's saying. What he's saying is that we are supposed to be Neil of encouragement, Mike of encouragement, your name of encouragement. God has designed it that we are to be encouragers to other people because God wants other people to live in a spirit of encouragement. Isn't that true? Now, the enemy, he has a plan as well, doesn't he? Just as God has a plan, the enemy has a plan, and he wants people to live in the life of discouragement, to be discouraged at things. And he uses the world around us to discourage people, and he does an incredible job at it. When we turn on the news, how many of you guys are encouraged? Yeah, right, not me. We're discouraged. When we look at the movies coming from Hollywood, from Disney, we're discouraged. When we look out and we see that the culture has just become this woke culture, completely saturated with the disease of political correctness, we become discouraged. And let's not even to mention all of the failures that we have in our lives and the things that we carry with us: rejection, anger, frustration, feelings of loneliness, worthlessness, depression, and anxiety. He wants to keep us discouraged. Where God is the great encourager, the enemy is the great discourager. Where God encourages, he ties his name to encouragement, the enemy's name is tied to the accuser. I want to take this idea of encouragement and discouragement, and I want to look at it through the eyes of John 10:10. It's a verse that a lot of us know, John 10:10. It says, "For the thief has come to steal, to kill, and to destroy, but Jesus has come to give life and life abundant." The enemy has come to take, to steal, and to discourage. God has come to breathe life and encouragement in us. And I want to see how that happens right now. A number of years ago, maybe 8 or 10 years ago, Sandy Zolman gave me a book. And I read the book and I became a great fan of the author, Caroline Leaf. And she's a neuroscientist. And this specific book I read was called Who Switched Off Your Brain? And in this book, she does this study. She studies the difference and the relationship with the brain and the mind. See, the brain and the mind are not the same thing. The brain is the gray matter between your ears. Your brain is, it's got weight. You can take a picture of it. You can do surgery on it. It's tangible, it's holdable. But the mind is completely different. The mind is more like your spirit. When your mind is basically, it's your thought processes. It's your thought life. It's your intellect. It's what helps you understand morals and ethics. It's why we know 2 + 2 = 4 and that God loves us. And she does this study between the brain and the mind. And she finds out that the brain is subservient to the mind to such a degree that what we think about ourselves actually changes the cell structure of your brain. And she watches and she studies the brain and she basically puts thoughts into two categories. She calls them thoughts on fear and thoughts on faith. They're basically negative thoughts, positive thoughts, but not empty positive thoughts, like faith-filled, real positive thoughts. And what she found out is that as you focus on thoughts on fear or negative thoughts, your brain goes through brain damage. When you are discouraged, your brain goes through brain damage. The memories tied to, the cells tied to memories start to gain holes in them, and you stop remembering things correctly. But it's not just your memory. It's also, you know, your body sends messages and enzymes and hormones and all kinds of different things into your body. And as you distort your brain, it starts to send bad things into your body and the risks of sickness and disease skyrocket. In fact, they say now that your thought life is attributed to more illness than your diet. The American Institute of Stress says that 70 to 90% of your doctor visits are due to your thought life. But it's the exact opposite when you believe things on faith, when you're encouraged in your spirit. The exact opposite happens. Those areas of your brain that are damaged actually start to reconstruct themselves. They start to get healthy again. Your immune system boosts. You're able to build memory, you develop intelligence, and you stay healthy longer. Listen, when we encourage people, we don't just give them some good word. We actually speak to the cell structure of their brain. When we use the power to encourage, we actually help people stay healthy longer, live longer. We feed their intellect. God has called us to be people who encourage. It's what he said. Now, I have had a firsthand experience with this. I can tell you how I've seen it happen. I've shared this story before. I haven't shared it in a while, and I'm going to do a fast version of it. I'll probably share it at length at another time. But 9 years ago, the most drastic, dramatic, hardest thing happened in my life. My wife, we were laboring with our fourth son, and my wife's uterus ruptured. It's where your uterus rips open, and she started to die, and my son started to die, and we got raced to the hospital in an ambulance, and they were able to save my wife, and she healed up fast, but my son went through 43 minutes of insufficient oxygen that gave him an incredible amount of brain damage, and we spent a long time in the hospital, and I remember when we were there, we got called into a conference room. And we sat at the conference table, and there was all of our team of doctors. And they told us, they basically said, "Neil, Heather, there's nothing we can do for your son. We've done everything we can. The trauma is too great, and your son is going to die. We are keeping him alive. And we regret to tell you that we want to recommend you taking him home on hospice. Hospice is end-of-life care. And I remember the main neurosurgeon. He says, listen, she says, if by some chance he doesn't die, if by some miracle that your son doesn't die, the only thing alive is his brainstem. He's going to be a quadriplegic. He is going to have no ability to think. He will not have the ability to recognize anyone, not you, not your wife. He will probably be cognitively blind. He won't recognize your voice. And that's what he sent us home with. So we were on hospice. But something cool happened. While we came home on hospice, my son stopped dying and he started living. It was interesting. And the nurse at hospice, they were there for 6 months. But after 6 months, the nurse says something that hurt a little bit. She said, listen, I'm really encouraged, and I'm so glad most of the time we leave once the patient dies, but we think that you need to get off hospice and get on home care. We don't think Ryden's gonna die. And that hurt me a little bit because she's putting hope into my being. And I said, how can you say that after all of the doctors are saying he's gonna die? And this is what she said. She said, when we started taking care of Ryden with you guys, we thought this might be one of those cases. One of those cases where love heals. She says, most people would have set their baby over in the corner, afraid to make memories, afraid to love them, afraid to have a relationship, because that's just gonna make the death that much worse. She said, but that's not at all what you guys did. You guys tried to make every type of memory you could with him. You walked him around in that little front pack throughout the house while you did chores. You sat him at your table even though he couldn't eat. When you guys ate, you took him to the beach. You took him to SeaWorld. You created memories. You gave him love. And we knew that love heals people. And my son is 9 years old today and he did not die. I remember that. It's the power of encouraging other people. I want to show you a video of my son. He's not walking right now, but we're helping and we're trying to him. But I will tell you this, he is not the kid that those doctors said. Go ahead.
Feel your legs.
I want you to listen to the encouragement we are giving him.
Let's see.
Big steps.
You gotta walk.
Good.
Good job.
Good.
Oh, don't give up. You can't give up.
Good, Ryden.
There you go. There you go.
Yes,
that's good job, bud. Good job. Keep going.
Foot stuck. Yep, your foot stuck.
There you go. You got it out.
Couple more steps. You're
this is my quadriplegic right here.
Good. Much
good.
Better, honey.
There you go, buddy.
Good walking.
Oh.
A little bit more, and then we'll do.
All right, that's good.
Oh my goodness.
How amazing is that? I don't know if you could hear in that video how much encouragement he got, but I will tell you this, it doesn't always work like this, but encouragement releases power into our lives. It's how it works. It's what God does. And encouragement goes far beyond just helping our physical lives. It helps our spiritual lives as well. What does someone need that is struggling through some type of sin need? Encouragement, right? What does someone need who just feels like all the walls are coming in around them and everything's getting tighter and they just want to give up? They need encouragement. Encouragement touches our spirit. God cares about encouragement so much he tied his identity to it. And then he says that we are to be of the same mind. I want to spend the rest of this message talking about four things encouragement does to other people. Listen, what we're talking about today, it is not about us. It's about what we can be for other people. Four things encouragement does to other people. The first thing is that encouragement helps others persevere. Encouragement helps others go farther. It helps them through their pain. Galatians 6:1 says, "Brethren, even if anyone is caught in any trespass, you who are spiritual, restore such a one in the spirit of gentleness, each one looking to yourself so that you will not be tempted." How does it say that we're supposed to restore people? Through a harsh word? Through yelling? Through a really good argument on social media? No. It says so often, and it's not always, don't get me wrong. Sometimes there are needs for harsh words. Sometimes there are needs for reality. But the truth is, more often than not, when we restore someone, we restore them through a gentle, encouraging word. You know, the Christian life, it's not an easy life, and we were not meant to live it alone. We are not meant to be able to tackle this adventure that we're on alone. God has placed people around us to be our encouragers and us to be theirs. Can I nerd out on you guys real quick? You guys, I love Lord of the Rings. Are there any Lord of the Rings people in here? Okay, good. All right, excellent. I love Lord of the Rings. Lord of the Rings, it's a movie about this hobbit named Frodo who comes into possession of a ring of power, and he's got to get it to the fires of Mount Doom. That's how, I mean, I know this movie, okay? And that's the entire premise of all of these movies. But Frodo is not alone inside the movies. He has 9 other companions. There's no way Frodo's going to be able to do this. He has 9 other companions that help him along this journey. Some of them are incredible warriors, the best warriors of that world. And some were worthless, short hobbits without many talents and abilities. And at the end of the movie, I'm just going to let you know I'm finishing the movie right now. Spoiler alert. From like 10 years ago. And the ring goes in to the fires of Mount Doom. Sauron, the bad guy, dies. And they're sitting there. He's been waiting to find out. He hasn't watched that movie, the last one. And they're sitting and they're waiting to find out. I'm sorry, they're sitting there and Frodo turns to one of those 9 companions. One of them. And he says, "I would have never been able to do this without you." Out of the 9, he turned to one, and it wasn't Legolas. It wasn't him with his archer skills and how he could just plow ways for Frodo to get by. And it wasn't Aragorn with his leadership skills and his sword fighting skills. And it wasn't Gandalf with all of his magic. It wasn't Gimli. Who was it? Samwise Gamgee. Samwise Gamgee was a short, plump hobbit with no abilities and no talents. Is this true? Except for one. He had one incredible talent. He was Frodo's biggest encourager, wasn't he? I don't care what movie you watch. He encourages Frodo along the way. He helped Frodo persevere the entire time. Every single one of those movies are filled with Samwise Gamgee's encouragement to Frodo. How many of you guys know that a word of encouragement given at the proper moment can be the difference between someone finishing their race well or collapsing on the way? Encouragement takes with it an incredible amount of power to help us. I want to read you what the writer of Hebrews says about encouragement. He says, Hebrews 3:12-13, "Take care, brethren, that there not be in any one of you an evil, unbelieving heart that falls away from the living God." He says, make sure that none of you fall off the path, that none of you give up, that none of you fall short. Do not give up. Persevere. But encourage one another day after day, so long as it is still called today. How often does the writer of Hebrews say that we need to engage in encouragement? Every single day. Let me ask you this question. Who in your life needs your encouragement? Who in your life needs for you to plant the seed of hope of joy. There are so many people around us that are without hope. That is why God has strategically placed us in our neighborhoods, in our cities, in our schools, in our churches, in our families, so that we can take that identity that God says that we're supposed to be of the same mind and help people persevere. Who have you encouraged today or yesterday? Do you encourage day after day? That is the question, because it helps us persevere. Let's go to the next one. The second thing that encouragement does to other people is that encouragement gives strength to others. Encouragement makes us stronger. It takes away our weakness. Romans 15, 1 through 2 says, "Now we who are strong ought to bear the weakness of those without strength, and not just please ourselves. Each of us is to please his neighbor for his good, to his edification, to his exhortation, to his encouragement." We can transfer strength to other people when we encourage them. And I like it better said in 1 Thessalonians 5:11. It says this. It says, "Therefore, encourage one another and build up one another, just as you also are doing." Now, this is, I love the way that he phrases this, because when you build something, you create something. But when you build up something, you add strength to that thing. When we encourage people, we add strength to them. We add strength to their abilities. We add strength to their characteristic. We add strength to their talents. We add strength to what they believe that God can do. We add strength to their hope, so that when the storms of life come, because they do come, they will not be weak and fragile. Instead, they will be strong. Encouragement means to impart courage. That's what it means. It means that we can place courage within other people. When you build something up, when you build your friends' lives up, you're giving them the building blocks of life to have a strong foundation. Think about the things. Remember I asked you earlier, the people that have been the most influential on you, I bet are the people that have encouraged you the most, because they've added strength to your life. They've helped you persevere. They've helped turn the weaknesses of your life into strengths, your doubts into hope. That is exactly what God is calling every single one of us to be. You know, it's interesting how something so small, like a word of encouragement, something so tiny can have such lasting results. Look at Teddy Stollard. Every single one of us could be a Mrs. Thompson. She did nothing great, nothing out of the ordinary. Every single one of us can be a Teddy Stollard. Often when I'm driving, I had to drive a lot. When I'm driving, I'm in my car alone, I ask God regularly, "God, who needs my encouragement right now? Tell me. I'm driving, I've got time. I'll call him, I'll text him. Who needs my encouragement right now?" And almost every time God puts someone in my heart. "Hey man, I just want to let you know I'm thinking about you. Really appreciate you. You've been a blessing to me, and I just am going to pray that God blesses you today." That's it. That's all it needs to be. But when someone gets that, it means a lot. All right, let's go to the third thing. Encouragement gives people vision for victory. It plots the course. It lets, when we encourage people, it helps them see the end. I'm about to use a word. And I want you guys to I want to apologize right now. I'm going to use the D word. Diet. All right? When you're on a diet, how do you feel about that diet? I looked online. I was wondering, how long does the average person last on a diet? And I looked online and it said 6 months. And I thought, baloney. Not true. That is not true. We don't like diets because diets are the worst. After 48 hours on your diet, you're already regretting it, aren't you? It's only been 48 hours and you have deep regrets. 7 days after your diet and you're just like, I make bad life choices. Sugar and carbs, they're my friends. You're not supposed to turn your back on your friends, right? And you're just done with it. And you're like, that's it. I you know what? I'm going to Dunkin' Donuts, okay? I'm going to, and you're walking out to your car and someone comes up to you or sees you and they're like, man, Neil, you look great. Are you losing weight? Are you on a diet? You're like, yes, I am. I'm on a diet. And you're good for like 2 more weeks. Is that not true? Because you get to see that something's happening. You get to see that you're on the line, on the path for victory. What about when you work out? It's the same thing. Working out, you gotta wake up and be at the gym at like 5 a.m. And you don't just like get to sit there and drink your coffee. Then you gotta do all this work and you never get the gains that you think you should be getting. Is this true? You're never like, wow, I'm filling out. This is awesome. You're like, this is pointless and expensive. And I'm losing sleep. And you finally just say, you know what? I'm done. I don't want to pay for it anymore. I am not waking up one more time to be at the gym at 5 a.m. And you're at church on Sunday. You decide that you're going to call in on Monday and cancel your membership. And you're walking down to church and someone grabs your arm. And they're like, whoa, you're getting big, huh? And you're at the gym at 4 on Monday morning. Because it's true. That's what encouragement does. It gives you the sense of vision. You see your path. And when we encourage other people, we pull them out of the destruction around them and we show them the path forward. I remember this guy, this was a number of years ago, and he was dealing with alcoholism. And I was meeting, it was a friend of mine, I was meeting with him regularly. And he's, you know, he's in trouble of losing his family, his wife, his kids, because of his addiction. He can't stop drinking. And he said something interesting to me. He said, you know, Neil, he was on this path and he had a couple setbacks while we were meeting. He said, Neil, I don't know, I can just explain it that when we meet, I'm good. I'm good for the next 2 or 3 days. I know what I'm supposed to be doing and I'm not gonna drink, But day 4 after our meeting, I just feel like I can't do it anymore. Why? Because when we were together, I would encourage him. I would speak life into him. I would show him the path that he can beat this. My words to him created power in him to see the end. We had to make a decision. We had to make a policy that if the temptation got too much, that he could always call me. And I could help walk him through it over the phone. And the great thing is that he made it all the way to being free from alcoholism. Yeah, right. But let me tell you something. Where there is no encouragement, there is automatically discouragement. Do you guys know that? And that was what was happening with him. After a few days, there was no more encouragement. There was discouragement. God has called us to be people who keep others encouraged, keep others together. Sometimes we are lost without the knowledge of where we are going, and then an encouraging word comes and points us in the right direction. That is what encouragement does. That is where it lives. Let me give you the fourth and last thing that encouragement does. Encouragement draws out the God-given potential inside of people. Encouragement pulls potential out of us. It lets us find what God has already placed inside of us. It pulls it out. And God uses you to pull it out of the people around you. My dad says something often. Let's put the quote up there. He says, "The things that I am the most encouraged in are the things that I become the best in." Isn't that true? The more encouragement that any one of us get in any area, those are the things that we become the best in. As I remember, 13 years ago was the first time I ever took this stage. I'm not going to tell you how old I was. I was 27 years old. And I was scared poopless. You guys, I was afraid to get up here. I had anxiety about it. I was terrified. I wet my bed all 7 nights that week. I didn't really, but Someone after came up to me and said, did you really wet your bed? No, I didn't. I was terrified of it. But I will tell you, the amount of encouragement that I got that day and all those days after pulled potential out of me to become who I am today. It was the encouragement from a lot of you guys standing out there, and I want to thank you for that. It draws potential out of us. My wife is my biggest encourager. My wife draws potential out of me. She makes me a better husband. She makes me a better father. She makes me a better pastor and a better human because of the encouragement that I constantly get from my wife. I want to ask this question. How many of you purposefully, thoughtfully encourage your spouse? Oh, snap, Neil. Don't go there. Now, this is interesting. Listen, we know that what we encourage inside of people draws potential out of them. It gives them strength. It helps form the cells in their brain better. Why would we not be encouraging our spouse? Think about that. What do we actually do often? We discourage our spouse in the things that we don't like, therefore even making them worse at it. Do you guys get this? You know, because what we discourage, we speak against. But what we encourage, we pull that potential out. I want to encourage you, speak truth and life to your spouse. Speak truth and life to your kids. God uses it well. Let's get that next quote up. You are braver than you believe, stronger than you seem, smarter than you think. Winnie the Pooh. Winnie the Pooh, Mark and then Winnie, okay? But this is true. This is where we should be. You know, when we speak truth that you are smarter than you think, braver than all of these things, it pulls that potential that God has already placed in those around us. We just need someone to spark it. Let's get the band out here. When we encourage others, we help them find what is inside. You know, the truth is many of us just don't realize the impact that our encouragement has on other people. But it's still there, and it still carries with it a great power. The question that we all have is, will we engage in being an encourager? You know, encouragement, being an encourager does not mean that you're weak. It means that you're strong. Some people think the more I tell other people how great they are, the more I say how worse off I am. That is the devil, okay? That is the steal, kill, and destroy. What God wants to do is he wants to use you to strengthen others. And here's the thing. The more you encourage, the more you become encouraged. Do you guys hear that? The more encouragement you give, the more you get. It is biblical. That's how it works. You reap what you sow. So I encourage you right now. Go out. Be an encourager. Stand up right now. I want you to think. Think in your life, in your surroundings, who you have interaction with. Who in your life needs encouragement? Maybe it's that widow down the street. She needs some compassion in her life. God has strategically placed you there. It's where he has you. Maybe it's that student that is off somewhere else, not back for summer. He's off at college and he's all alone out there. He needs your encouragement. Maybe it's that recently divorced person. They just need some encouragement. They need some self-assurance inside of their life. Who in your life, because every one of us have a different life, but we've all been strategically placed, who in your life can use you to encourage them? Let's all commit to being more like Mrs. Thompson. Let's all commit. She didn't do something so great that none of us can do it. Let's all commit to looking for the Teddy Stallards around us so that we can change their life trajectory and that they too can have hope. Father, thank you so much for your encouragement and for your hope. Thank you that you have given us the power to encourage, the power to give strength to other people. And Lord Jesus, I pray all over this room that you would open up our minds to know who you're calling us to give that strength and to pull that potential out of. Amen.